Welcome to the latest IWA General Election Podcast. I'm Rhea Stevens, Policy, Projects and External Affairs Manager for the IWA. And I'm joined today by Laura McAllister, Professor at the Wales Governance Centre, and Darren Hill, MD of Positive. So the 7 days to polling day. Darren, how would you characterise this election so far?
Well, I think it's been a game of two halves. It's normally Laura who does the sport analogies, but that's at least what I know and understand. I think one of the most striking tweets I saw in the last week, and most of them have just been dire and predictable, but there was one that stood out for me, and it was from a journalist quoting an unnamed Conservative candidate who said, this campaign switched as soon as we saw the manifesto. It went from BC to AD. And it does almost seem to have been two eras within the campaign. It was the Conservative manifesto, to me, as much as the terrorist attack, actually, if not more, that was the defining event.
Yeah, I agree with Darren, but take it a little bit further back. And I always thought this was going to be an election where the campaign would probably determine the result more than any other we've seen for quite a long time. And there's a kind of irony in that, because the campaign broadly has been quite low-key and pretty boring and predictable. But of course, major events have changed some of the rhythms of it. I think the manifesto fiasco, because I don't think you can say anything other than that from the Conservatives, was probably the pivotal moment. But if you go back to the very start of the whole election campaign, and we saw some really wild polls, especially in Wales, with the Conservatives being so far ahead in those, I always felt that was very unlikely to be the outcome of the election. Partly because I think we've seen much, much greater voter fluidity of late than we've ever seen before, and there's far less traditional party alignment. So clearly, when you put those into the mix, there's always likely to be some significant swings forward and back. But I have to say, I think we're kidding ourselves if we think the kind of worlds that we're living in are the same as the ones that the voters are seeing and feeling. I think there's two election campaigns going on here. There's what we're talking about, and especially on social media and so on, and on the political programmes, on the mainstream media. And then there's kind of people who have only a very limited passing interest in the election, who will wait until the last moment and determine who they feel has most credibility. And I'm afraid it'll be a very presidential decision at that moment.
And maybe in those circumstances, the deeply tedious and deeply unimaginative strong and stable versus coalition of chaos, which has bored all of us, might be heard by some people for the first time, God forbid, for the very first time, just closer to that voting day.
I think that's really interesting, because it begs the question, doesn't it, that if Labour had a different leader, where might they be at this moment in an election campaign? Because whatever you think of the Labour campaign, the leadership of the Labour Party is still an issue. Now, I might have dissipated a little bit, and I actually think the Shadow Secretary of State for Wales, Chris Rees, is probably right in that it isn't being raised as much on the doorstep now as it was at the beginning. But nevertheless, Corbyn remains very unpopular, and he still isn't seen as a credible leader.
And shouldn't he be being raised on the doorstep in a positive way by now, after the sheer level of exposure he's had? And, you know, he's had some bad interviews, but most of them have gone all right, and, you know, Labour should be relatively happy with how he's performed.
Yeah, it's the classic kind of favourite versus underdog, isn't it? You know, going back to Darren's sporting analogy, which he took from me, were my favourite ones. But, you know, when a non-league team plays a Premier League team, the Premier League team has got everything to lose, and the non-league team has got everything to gain. And that's what we've seen between Labour and the Conservatives in this election. I think Corbyn's performed well as a leader. But don't forget, we had some of the great Labour Party grandees at the start of this saying they knew they weren't going to win this election. And even now, Karen Jones can't bring himself to say that he would prefer Corbyn as Prime Minister. If you look at the language that he's using, he's saying, well, he would make a better choice than May. There's nothing positive and proactive about that. It's very much, we know we have a weak leader, but we're positioning him against another unpopular leader at this point in time, which says it all about the Labour Party, in my view.
In an election that has been about leadership, the Welsh political leaders have now had three opportunities to pitch the Welsh arm of the parties on TV in recent weeks. How successful do you think they've been?
Oh, I think it's been a bit of a mixed bag, really. I mean, if you'll forgive me, I'm going to try and avoid viewing it just through the prism of last night's debate. But that's the one that's so fresh. And my opinion hasn't changed from watching it to the following morning, really. It's just, it felt too safe and too staid, and the most interesting people in the room most of the time were the audience, not the panellists. And that's partly, I think, down to overexposure, particularly of Leanne and of Carwyn. And that's not to say they're bad performers, that's not to say they're insincere, that's not to say they don't connect, and that's not to say they don't answer the questions as well, which, in fairness to them, I think for professional politicians, they do a very good job of. It's just, I'm just a little bit bored of hearing from the two of them.
I don't think the leaders' debates in Wales have made a jot of difference to how people will vote in the election. I think Darren's right. Carwyn and Leanne are easily the most polished performers, but so they should be. They've had experience of a previous general election and an assembly election. But let's remember, despite Leanne Wood's very successful performances in the leadership debates in 2015, it didn't generate success for Plaid Cymru in terms of the votes cast and the seats won. And I think that's quite significant. I don't think there is a direct causal relationship between successful performance in media debates and what happens on the doorstep, because of my point earlier that there are two election campaigns going on. And I'm afraid the mass of public are not watching these programmes, or certainly not engaging with them in a way that we think that somebody should, let's say. So I really don't think it will have made any significant difference, in truth.
Mm. There's evidence of, and you've touched on this briefly already, but evidence of real division between the Welsh and UK arms of certainly the Labour Party and the Conservatives as well. Have you got a sense of whether or not there are any consequences of that for the voting public?
Consequences? Goodness me, I tried to stop predicting anything too far into the future these days, but certainly this is the most disconnected campaign I've ever seen by the Labour Party, where different parts at different levels don't seem to be working together at all in any way, shape or form. But let me also say it's probably the most disingenuous campaign I've seen from parties across the board, where it's not just the issue of connectivity within a party that's been disregarded. It's the whole issue of what's actually devolved, what's at stake, what's the real debate about. It does seem to me that even Plaid, who I once considered to be quite pure on these issues, and were on a mission to educate as well as to win elections, seem to have put that to one side, and everyone is just scrambling around and happily giving out messages that they think probably quite rightly will resonate with voters, but it doesn't provide any clarity and doesn't provide any respect for the devolution settlement.
I think it's a pretty damning indictment of where we are in UK politics at this moment in time. I think there's a real lack of respect for the different tiers of election and what decisions are up for grabs at that level. And I think it basically plays into an already very big chasm between political leaders and the public. The media have had some attempt at challenging on this. I think about the challenges that the BBC levelled at Labour when their manifesto pledges were primarily devolved issues. But in truth, again, you know, this is a recipe for confusion. And it's also interestingly the case that the public seem to be ahead of politicians on this, because if you look at polling, then clearly people are making different decisions based on which level of election they're facing. So you ask them, how would you vote in a Westminster general election versus how you'd vote in a National Assembly election. You take Plaid Cymru, for example, the vote doubles for an Assembly election.
Mm-hmm.
So people are clearly making an intelligent choice based on where they think a party might exert power. But you know, this plays very badly into the hands of those who think that the public are just a lump of plasticine to be moulded to suit the party's demands at that time. And I think that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's been quite a depressing, election to behold for somebody who's actually interested in the joy of multi-level democracy.
Mm. The latest polls, the Welsh polls, are showing Labour with a strong lead. To what extent can that be credited to the Welsh Labour Party, do you think?
I think they fought a credible and solid campaign. They decided at the outset to use Carwyn as a central focus rather than their MP candidates. I mean, you know, the purist in me again thinks that there's something deeply wrong with that, but it seems to be a winning strategy. Carwyn Jones is far more popular than Jeremy Corbyn, far more popular than his party a lot of the time.
Mm. I think we've got to be careful at this moment not to pay credit to anybody, because we don't know how the results will go, clearly, in a week's time. But I said from the very beginning, and I stick to this, I never believed there would be a complete collapse of the Labour vote in Wales. And there's a number of reasons for that. The kind of reach of Labour in Wales is very, very substantial. It's deep and it's wide. They have a very effective party machine, particularly in those seats that they've held for more than 20 or 30 years. You're thinking about the likes of Bridgend, for example, some of the seats in North East Wales. So they know where their vote is, and they actually know that their vote in lots of places like that is quite elderly. Therefore, they will go out and vote if they are encouraged to go out and vote, and if they are canvassed, and if they are reminded to vote. And you're talking about seats like Bridgend with an under 2,000 majority. And I think that's where the effectiveness of a Labour machine will come into play. Now, I don't think they'll keep all of those seats. If you take it as being five in the south, five in the north, just for ease of reference, I don't think they'll retain all of those. But I've said from the very beginning, I don't think they lose the majority of those either, simply because they're a very well-run, efficient machine. Now, what I'm nervous about doing is putting that down to something such as Carwyn's presence at the front of the campaign.
Okay.
I think this is much deeper and cultural and more entrenched in the Welsh voter psyche.
Yeah.
And I think that switch from Labour to Conservative, despite the influence of UKIP, which we know about, is too simplistic in every case in Wales.
And look, you're always ultimately convincing, Laura, and you quite often make me change my mind halfway through a podcast. But let me pick up on one particular point, which I think a lot of us were talking about 7 weeks ago, and we seem to have forgotten, and I do wonder if we're going to revisit a week from now, and that is these former UKIP voters switching directly to the Conservatives. And Laura illustrates it with Bridgend, a seat she, of course, knows well, where there is a Labour majority of under 2,000, but the last general election there were over 6,000 UKIP votes. Now, if the UKIP polling is anything like the polls have suggested, and bear in mind it's quite consistent when it comes to UKIP, it isn't these wild variations Conservatives and Labour have been getting in Wales. If there's any consistency there, there is probably 3,000-4,000 votes that's going to go straight from UKIP straight over to the Conservatives, okay? And there are a couple of other seats in Wales where I suspect that will happen. So let's not forget that point, because it was one all of us were making some weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've got bored of talking about it,
yeah.
But I think we will end up revisiting
it next
week.
Don't you think, though, Darren, that's the critical factor in all of that is turnout?
Yes, of course it is.
Because we don't know that UKIP voters who voted last time are minded to turn out this time. And then we don't know that they'll all switch to the Conservatives, even though that's probably what we can expect.
Yeah.
So turnout is critical. I think in some of these seats, like the Newports, like the Wrexhams and the Clwyd Souths and the Bridgends, I think the critical factor will be how much of the Labour vote they can get out. If they can get it out, then I think they could hold on to more of those 10 marginals than lose.
So with 7 days left, What kind of themes, what kind of issues do you expect the parties to be pitching? What kind of topics do you think will dominate in the next couple of days?
Well, the Tories aren't going to change the boring tune that they've been playing on a gramophone for the last 6 weeks, are they? It's going to be strong and stable and coalition of chaos. And you know what? I didn't think there was any credibility in the coalition of chaos bit. I thought, for goodness sake, can they come up with something original? But actually, as we've seen a poll emerging overnight, that's showing that at least a hung parliament is a more than a theoretical possibility. Expect that coalition of chaos argument to be mainstreamed. And what that means in terms of what that coalition are, I'd be kind if there was a potential coalition there. How they could hold together over an issue like Brexit is beyond me. So I think Conservatives will use that to put Brexit back centre stage.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what's interesting is whether Labour would have wanted to be in this position in the polls with a week to go. Because I think actually it plays quite well into the Conservative narrative that Darren's referring to there. If people genuinely sense that there could be a hung parliament or that Labour could win, because who knows, we've got seven days left here, then the issue plays well into the hands of the Conservative strategy of saying, do you want Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister negotiating around Article 50 and so on? If Labour was close, but not as close as it might be, that is actually a better position for Labour to be in at this moment. It sounds strange, but it probably is, because then in some of those marginal seats, people can say, well, I know Labour are not going to be in power, but I like my local candidate. I think he or she is a strong voice for Wales in this area, and I'm going to cast my vote for Labour.
It's more like shy Labour, isn't it?
It is, yeah. If I was a Labour strategist, I wouldn't want to be this close in time.
We need to stop agreeing, honestly.
It's a bad policy.
Well, on that note, on a note of agreement, thank you, Darren, and thank you, Laura. Thank you for listening to this episode of the IWA podcast. Join us again soon.